This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hi, this is Tim DeZarn. I played four different aliens on The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and two aliens on Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Earl Grey Hot.
Welcome, listeners, to another cup of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to the next generation. I'm your host, Amy Nelson. Richard is away this week, but joined with me today is the wonderful Justin Ozer. Justin, hello, and how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm trying to think of something different to say this week, because every week I'm like, it's great to be here. I love talking Next Generation every week. So,
but it is great to talk Next Generation every week.
It is great to talk about it. And we're going to be talking about an episode that I love.
Yes.
So I'm really looking forward to that. But I hope for listeners that don't love this episode, and there are some out there, that they'll listen to what we have to say about it.
Well, before we get going to talk about the amazing episode and introduce our guest, let's get some Babel Conference feedback. And this is from our episode about Picard's family, Earl Grey 245. Justin, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, so Greg Malumbi says, you guys kind of blew my mind with the idea of the Nexus sending Picard back to Catan and actually meeting with the real Kamen. I mean, talk about bringing generations together in an emotional way. That would have been so much better than what we got.
Right? That was a great idea. And yeah, the Nexus had so much possibility. And this one I hadn't even thought of, to have him go and meet Kamen.
Yeah, I think it would have been really wonderful. Now, I know there are people that are definitely big fans of Generations. For those who are, I wonder, would they have liked to see that substitution? Or are they fine with the Picard Victorian Christmas Nexus?
Yeah.
I just wonder. Let us know. So I know Brandon Shamatala is a fan. I'm calling you out to comment on that.
There you go.
Or anyone else that has an opinion on that. But yeah, glad that you enjoyed that idea.
Yes. Well, Prescott Harden had to say, as much as I love this episode, family, I've found that I've got an even greater appreciation for it after reading the book, The Autobiography of Jean-Luc Picard by David A. Goodman. Although not strictly canon, it shows you the story behind Picard's upbringing and why the relationship between the Picard brothers is so acrimonious and dysfunctional. It also shows Maurice Picard's role in creating an adversarial relationship between his son. Amy Nelson, if you haven't read it already, this is a must-read for any TNG enthusiast. I'm sure you've read the book, Justin.
I have. You know, it actually took me a while. It came out almost a year ago, and I started reading it a bit, but I got sidetracked by some stuff, but picked it up more recently. I think especially because of the Picard series, and I wanted to kind of see what David A. Goodman did with this.
Oh.
And it's really good, and it does tell you more about his upbringing and the family relationships and different things in his life. I mean, it's actually really good. Amy, I definitely recommend you read it if you have a chance, or other listeners out there that haven't read it. But be aware, if you're familiar with the novels, it does conflict with some of the things that happen in the novels, but that's okay. Goodman's kind of making his own universe, yeah, is what I feel. And it's interesting to get that different perspective. But yeah, I mean, it's a good thing to bring up, Prescott, in terms of our conversation, because it does kind of add a lot to how you think about these things. Yeah. So Stefan Ringline says, great discussion, guys. Joe really brought in some very good perspectives, but on what he said about Robert, I have to say, au contraire, mon frère. I absolutely love Jeremy Kemp's portrayal of Robert. For me personally, the interaction of the Picard brothers was very believable and felt real. Like Amy, I also recognized some little things from spending time with my own siblings in the past. The rivalry and accumulated anger of Robert is played so well, ergo is, at least for me, realistic. About René in Generations. I always thought this is René, his nephew, because it's the Nexus. Picard wishes for him to be alive again, and the way he hugs him definitely proves that he's that exact René. It's the Nexus, so as I recall, you get what you wish for, no matter if it makes sense or not. He wishes that René is part of his own little family, or even his son. The Victorian style is maybe just something Picard fancies because it's something different from his time and space, or it's his 24th century interpretation of the Belle Epoque. I love Generations and will defend it to anyone, like Amy does for Nemesis, because of those precious moments where we see more of what's behind the curtain in Jean-Luc Picard's mind. So thank you, Stefan, for, well, those comprehensive comments. You talked about a lot of things we talked about in the episode, and it sounds like you're someone that that likes what happened in the Nexus there and wouldn't want to substitute, you know, Kamen or Catan. So we got a little feedback on that already, I guess. But no, I mean, lots of really great points. And, you know, maybe it is meant to really represent that René, even if he looks different, played by a different actor. So, yeah, appreciate the thoughts and the comments.
Yeah. And defend, no matter what other people say, because if it's good for you, then that's all that matters. So,
yeah. Well, and you know what? Next episode, we are talking about Generations. So we'll get more into it.
Yes. All right. Well, Justin, it's time to bring on our wonderful guest who I have had the wonderful opportunity of podcasting with. He was on Postcards from the Edge recently, and that is Rob Chapman. Rob, hello. Welcome to Earl Grey.
Hi, Amy. Hi, Justin. Thanks for having me on Earl Grey. It's really exciting. I'm a huge fan of the show and of both of you, so glad to be here.
Oh, thank you. Great to have you here.
How long have you been listening to Trek FM? I was curious.
Ooh, it must be at least 2-3 years now. It feels like a lot longer. It probably, yeah, probably about 2-3 years.
Yeah, well, we were on I think it was one of my first roundtables when we first podcast together all those years back.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, there's been so many of them.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, I think you've been to a lot of roundtables. I've been on roundtables with you as well, Rob.
Yeah, yeah.
And in fact, I think it was a roundtable that we did on books that inspired you to do what you do now.
It was, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Well, tell us, Rob, what is it that you do now?
Well, Star Trek related anyway. Yes. I run a Trek book club on Twitter, which you can find by searching for at Trek Book Club. And it's dedicated to Star Trek books, and we basically select a Star Trek book each month. We read it separately and then come together at the end of the month, usually on the last Saturday of the month, and discuss it on Twitter. So we talk about the bits that we liked about the book, the bits that perhaps we didn't, favorite characters, pose questions. Everyone's welcome, newbies and veteran Star Trek book readers as well. So, if you're interested in Star Trek books, come along and join in.
Yeah, and well, I've been participating, I think, in just about every one of them. I'm a patron of your Trek book club. I love what you do, and it's really great. I mean, not only because of all the interaction, but you've gotten some authors to interact as well, to answer questions and to contribute to the discussion. And yeah, I mean, I think even if you've never read a novel, I think, Rob, you do it in such a way that you could just like jump in with whatever is going on that month and to read the novel. So I don't think you have to feel like you've read like every novel or you've really experienced with it. There's a lot of people, it's their first.
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, I've only read maybe 10, 11 Star Trek books, so I'm by no means a veteran. So yeah, you don't have to have read lots to join in, and you can just chip in with questions or comments or anything really. So yeah, we've been really lucky to have authors and I think on one we had Aaron Eisenberg commented on.
Yes.
Which was really cool.
Wow.
So yeah.
So do you rotate through the series of books that you read, or is it just...
There's no particular order, really. It's kind of a mixture of whatever I fancy the look
of.
Oh,
nice. Well, and it is your show.
And sometimes I put it out to a public vote and people decide. And some of my Patreon supporters, I let them decide as part of the perks. So, yeah.
But I think at this point, you've pretty much covered every series at least once, right?
I think we have, yes. Some, yeah. A lot more than others, because I'm a bit biased. But
well, and it depends on what people put out there. But exactly. It's great. I definitely recommend people check it out. And by the time this episode drops in early October, you might be in the process of selecting the one for October, but that might be a good time for people to jump in.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Well, that's great. So today we're going to talk about the episode Lessons. And so I wanted to know, Rob, what drew you that you wanted to talk about this episode?
It's a strange one, really, because I came across this more recently. I mean, I've watched it a long time ago, but it kind of was in the background and I didn't really remember much from it. I watched it again recently and it really resonated with me. And I think I'm a bit of a sucker for the underdog. And this, the Picard's love interest in this episode, a lot of people, or that I've come across, don't seem to perhaps like her as much as Picard's other love interests. And I really, really like her. I think she's a fantastic character and it would have been great to see more of her. So the episode and the romance story and seeing a different side to Picard was really, really interesting. And there was personal things that resonated with me and my life and my partner's life. But I'll perhaps explain that a bit later when we delve into an analysis of the episode. But I really, really enjoyed the episode.
All right, Justin, what are your initial thoughts about this episode when you heard that we were going to be discussing it? Like, what do you think about Lessons?
Well, you know, I was happy, Rob, that you wanted to talk about this one because this is one of my favorites. And yeah, I know there are some people there that don't like Nella Darren as much, but I've said this on Earl Grey before, which is probably a controversial opinion. I like her the most with Picard, even a little bit over Beverly Crusher. Rob's like, yes. But maybe we'll get more into this, but I feel like you get to see just in this one episode more Picard kind of working with her and being interested in what she's doing. I mean, she's doing like all of this really interesting science, and she's someone that can kind of stand up to Picard and challenge him and all of that. Not that Beverly Crusher doesn't, but in the series, like, they always had this thing like, will they, won't they? It's just like a little bit kind of on the margins, and Attached, it gets more so, but they pull back. So you have to wait for the novels for Beverly Crusher and Jean-Luc Picard to be involved. But in this one episode, you get to really see Picard kind of go for it and also grapple, what is it like if I'm the captain and I'm romantically involved with someone under my command, which is something that can be very relevant for our own lives. And I don't know, there's just always, I really love how the character is played. I think that, you know, if the actress was maybe different and played it differently, maybe it wouldn't be as strong, but I think they're really strong performances all around. And it's hard to define somehow, but I just really love her character and thought she was like super interesting and a great match for Picard. So yes, I was looking forward to it. Short answer.
Yeah. Yeah, when I heard, I'm like, oh, Justin's going to be so happy because we all know he loves Nella Darren. She's definitely at the top. I mean, my favorite, well, outside of Beverly, but my favorite is Inej in
Insurrection.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I like that, you know, romance a little bit better. But I do think Nella is way better than Vosh. So she...
Well, I will agree on that. And I know we'll have listeners that will disagree.
But yes, I know that too. So Nella Darren, she's definitely up there. But I mean, I still like the Picard Crusher. And it's interesting, and I'm sure we'll talk about it later because I have some things to say about, you know, how that relationship is with Crusher, you know, with him discussing it and stuff like that. So that's interesting. But definitely we do get a completely different side of Captain Picard in this. And so, yeah, that builds the context of his character so much more. And it is just great to see a different side of him. So yeah, I really quite enjoy this episode. I think it does good to call back to previous episodes. And so, yeah, we just get this history and this wonderful Picard story. I'm glad that we get to discuss it. So one of the things that I think is very evident is how do you deal with workplace romances? I mean, Picard, this is one of the first things that he realizes is like, yeah. And I love he calls in Deanna Troi, his personal counselor, as we all know.
Yes. I mean, this definitely supports her theory.
Yeah. And she's there for the captain. And, you know, he is very concerned, you know, how are other people going to view it? What is the official Starfleet policy? Like, there's a lot of things to consider in this workplace romance. Rob, what do you think? Does he handle it well, Picard?
Generally, I think initially there's that scene when they're in the turbo lift after they've had their little duet in the in the Jefferies tube, and he almost when another crew member enters the turbo lift, he blanks Nella Darren, which is incredibly rude.
He becomes like much more formal about it.
Yeah, yeah. Suddenly, say, you know, not calling her Lieutenant Commander or, you know, Commander, whatever. But then I think he realizes once he's talked to Troi that, you know, that wasn't the correct thing to do. And it's okay for him for the crew to know that he's in a relationship. And he immediately apologizes to Nella.
Or even just that it's okay to be friendly with someone in a turbo lift. Yeah. Like, you don't have to, like, yeah.
Yeah, he gets very stiff, doesn't he?
Yeah.
But I think generally they both handle it really well. I mean, you know, they raise the point that there's this potential conflicts, or there could be conflicts. The fact that, you know, he might have to put her in harm's way if she goes on an away mission. And I think when Riker does put her in charge of one of the away teams, he almost tries to persuade her, like, you know, is there someone else that could do this? And she, you know, she says that, I assume I was picked because I'm the best person. So they both jostle with it, but I think they end up doing the right thing, and it seems to work for them. But obviously, at the end of the episode, we ultimately see that they don't think it's going to work. So hence why she leaves the ship. But personally, it would be a really really awkward, I mean, thing to if that relationship went wrong and they stayed on the ship, it could cause a really awkward atmosphere.
And anyone that's been in a workplace where that's happened, that can be really tense.
yeah. So I would steer clear of that. But they do seem to handle it quite well.
I think there's definitely an adjustment period that the crew has to go through. Because that's evident, you know, when Nella Darren is, you know, requesting more time and Riker sort of feels like, oh my gosh, I'm put in this position where is it okay if I say no? You know, what's the circumstances? You know, is she going to go around me, you know, and go straight to Picard and ask for this time, you know? And I see Riker is really having to struggle with this because he wants to still remain professional, but sort of respect the relationship that, you know, his captain is having. It's very awkward, those scenes.
But I think that they do manage to negotiate it pretty well. And I mean, I think the good thing is, but I think both Picard and Darren are trying to do it in good faith. Like, Darren makes this request, and then she kind of finds out about it later, and she's like, aha, okay, I understand what happened here, and I can do better. So it seems like toward the end of the episode that they're negotiating it better, and Picard has this conversation with Riker, like, you know, is she asking anything unusual? No. Is she trying to do her job? Yes. Well, then go ahead and do yours, and I'm fine with that, you know? And I get the feeling that Darren is the kind of person that if she feels like Riker is doing... I mean, she's, I think, in the position that she's trying to do the best for a department that really we haven't heard too much about or seen too much on the show, so it doesn't seem like it's like the top of the food chain or anything. So she's trying to do the best she can for, you know, the scientists that are working for her and all of that.
Yeah.
And but I think she's okay with, like, okay, if I make this request and you feel like the resources are better allocated elsewhere, like, I can accept that, but I'm going to argue for it and shouldn't feel uncomfortable about that. So I think they get to a good place, but of course the place where it breaks down is Picard has to send her on this mission where she might die. And when he thinks that she's died, he says that he's begun to shut down. So he's really concerned that if he does something like that, I think he'll feel really guilty about sending someone he loves to their death, and that it would affect his ability to command for some time to come, or maybe he wouldn't even want to be in Starfleet anymore. So it doesn't work out. I mean, I think it's ironic that you get, like, in the novels that he's married to Crusher and serving on the same ship with her. And Riker's married to Troy and serving on the same ship with her. So they deal with it somehow. But in this instance, yeah, I think they do really well, but it comes to a point where it's life and death and it's like, just can't deal with that at this point, which is a shame.
Yeah, like in the future, like really, how is that going to work? I mean, you can see Miles and Keiko. Like Miles isn't, you know, in a position of authority over
Keiko's
her.
Keiko's not in Starfleet, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's like this workplace romance is completely a different scenario because here he is captain. He is in command. He is in control. He's the one that's, you know, top dog. And so to have a relationship, like, is there any type of coercion? How is he going to... respond when someone gets placed in danger, or if someone like Riker was concerned, you know, if Riker says no, is he going to feel the backlash of that? Because, you know, how is Picard going to handle it? You know? And so I think that when Riker goes into Picard's ready room, you know, and then just gets that reassurance from Picard, like, you're doing your job and I'm going to respect that. But so many times when people fall in love, they lose their head and they follow with their heart. And so if Riker says, no, you're not getting more time, or no, you're not getting blah, 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 then if Picard is acting with his heart, why would you tell her no? She needs this, da, 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 and thinking with his heart over his head. I mean, that's a realistic, I'm sure everyone can relate to, you know, someone who normally is logical, falls in love, especially a workplace romance. And then the dynamic changes so much, especially when it's someone in authority, power.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised that they say in the episode that there are no Starfleet regulations about this because, I mean, like, so first of all, I mean, of course, if it's like a consensual relationship, they're not going to have any regulations about that. But they should, I think, recognize at some level that if two people do have that relationship and they can, you know, affect the running of the ship, that there needs to be, I don't know how it would even work, like something so that, you know, if it seems like that relationship is affecting the running of the ship in some way, that there's some process or something. I don't know. Because I actually don't know how in our time that companies deal with this kind of thing or what rules that they have. Like, I've never been in a workplace romance myself, never had to like see like, oh, what does it say in the employee manual about that kind of thing. So I don't know if you guys know like how it actually works or if like what that means, you know?
I know Starfleet isn't primarily a military organization, but I mean, in the military, are you allowed? I'm assuming you're not allowed to have a relationship with a subordinate. I don't know for certain, but I would assume.
Well, I know, in as far as education goes, again, there's that, you know, subordinate. So definitely teachers can marry teachers, blah, blah, blah. Married couples, if they're teacher to teacher, can work in the same school. However, if there's a principal, then you are not allowed to have your spouse, you know, be under you. So there's no, if there's an evaluation process, you're not allowed to be in that subordinate, you know, you can be coworkers, you know, peers on the same level, but you can't have that control, evaluation, power, you know, separation. So.
Yeah, by the way, I was curious, so I kind of looked it up on what some of the regulations are. And I think this is talking about the U.S. Army. Only off-limits romances between an officer and an enlisted member, but some exceptions exist. So they do have some things like if it's officer and enlisted person where they're ordering them to do things that's not allowed. But otherwise, for the most part, yeah.
And I wonder, is Picard the only captain that we see engage in a relationship with someone directly underneath him? I know we have like Sisko and Castiates, but Castiates
isn't in Starfleet.
Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking about this, like what other romances do we see for people that are, and there is Worf and Jadzia Dax, but they're kind of, I guess, at the same level. They're not,
I guess they're in different, to each other. Different departments, yeah. I guess, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're both lieutenant commanders, so.
Yeah. They don't have any authority to.
And they don't evaluate or, have.
Yeah. But again, like, in the novels, they do have people that are captains that have relationships with people underneath them, and somehow they navigate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did want to bring up Sisko. I'm glad that you did. Going back to sort of what I was saying, like, you know, Sisko is generally pretty level-headed, and it just happenstance in my Deep Space Nine watch that I watched For the Cause just right after Lessons. And here Sisko is, and it just sort of goes to my exact point. Like, Sisko's normally very regimented. Well, okay, I won't say very, because we know he is very passionate. But yeah, Cassidy comes in with her ship and she's like, oh, I have to go. I have to meet my, you know, person, because, you know, she's trading stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so sorry. The words aren't coming.
Well, she's
to
making
me.
A rendezvous with another ship.
Yeah, she has to catch his rendezvous. And so they suspect that she's helping the Maquis. And so he lets her leave without a ship inspection. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? Picard would never do this. I'm just having a hard time with Sisko. But that goes to the point of there's this workplace romance, you know, and because they are personally involved, he's going to let this slide and break regulations and let her leave without a full inspection.
But I haven't seen the episode for a while, but was he doing that because he suspected she was working with the Maquis and it works into catching her in it and sending her to prison at the end of the episode?
Yes, it does. But I think he still was wanting her to be innocent and to prove herself innocent, you know.
True.
So
yeah, his judgment, I think, in that episode does get affected. And it is interesting to make the comparison, because I think I love Sisko. He's one of my favorite captains, along with Picard.
Yes, but I saw your post.
But his judgment, I think, does more often than Picard get affected by his emotions.
Yes.
And there's different parts in the series where he's doing things where, I mean, I think in, you know, For the Cause too, for, you know, Eddington, he lets his emotions kind of get into it big time, right?
Big time.
It's a very personal.
I'm like, Picard would not do this.
No. I mean, but I mean, it gets to some of the differences between the shows.
Yes.
Like, they're not in the Federation. They're dealing with all these things on the fringes, so things can be different. But yeah, that's the thing. Like, I'd be surprised if they don't have regulations about it, because maybe Picard handles it really well, but someone else would not.
Exactly.
They would abuse it.
Yeah. Sorry to get all Deep Space Nine. It just sort of
That's fine. It's great to bring that in. I hadn't thought about that, but it's a good point, and that's the other place where we see that kind of thing.
Yeah. So it was also interesting. This episode deals heavily with music, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just found it very interesting, like, why he chooses to share. So Picard is telling Nella about the flute and his experience. You know, and I'm like, why did he choose to share that specific ordeal in his life? He could have shared, like, something more, you know, say, like, the Borg, or, you know, his time, Damon Bach, you know, way back in season one, where he was being tortured by the Ferengi. Like, there's so many different experiences. Like, why this one? It doesn't seem... I don't know. It just seems like there were other situations that would have impacted him more, and why he would share the Inner Light experience. Rob?
I guess, well, they have that common interest, I guess. They're both passionate about their music. So I guess maybe that's something that's affected him and that he's passionate about, that also is something that she has a connection to and an interest in.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess maybe that might be why, but I see your point. Definitely there are other things that he could have shared, but I really like this, the reappearance of the flute, and that music gets me every time.
Yeah, well, no, but I think he does even talk about it in a conversation with Darren, where, you know, she's kind of asking about, like, why are you telling me this? And he says, because I want you to understand what my music means to me.
That's right.
And what it means for me to be able to share it with someone. Because, like, I think part of it is sharing that music for that very personal experience. So he had this experience in the Inner Light. They find the flute on the probe, which Riker gives to Picard. The only other time before Lessons you even see any reference to that or see the flute is in A Fistful of Datas, and it's kind of comic because he's trying to practice by himself and people keep interrupting him, right?
Right.
But the sense that I get is that he hasn't really shared how much it means to him that he lived this whole lifetime of experience. He had this family. I get the feeling like, you know, he put some things in an official report, right? Or maybe talk with Troy about it a little bit. But this is the one thing that is one of the most meaningful experiences of his entire life that he can share with her. And not only share the story, like this happened, this happened, this happened, but to play his music for her. And I think one of the things that's really striking is, you know, they I think shortly after that, they start improvising around this melody. And you see Patrick Stewart as Picard give about the biggest smile we ever see him give, because it's almost like he's really relaxed at that point. Because one of the things I noticed is that probably in this episode, you see him really spending more free time than just about any other episode, maybe Captain's Holiday, although that wasn't maybe as much free time as an adventure. But like he has this time that he's spending, and he's really enjoying it. And it feels like in some of those scenes, he's like the happiest you've ever seen him. And I think part of it is because he's had this weight of this experience, and now he can share it with someone that he loves. And that's like a special experience for him. So I think, and if you were sharing the experience with the Borg, there's not really happiness that comes out of that. It was a terrible, terrible experience. So he's wanting to share something that they can really turn into something, you know, beautiful. And I think those scenes where they're playing together, maybe especially in the Jeffries tube, is just wonderful. I just always smile because you see him having a good time. He's not a captain with all of this responsibility. He's a person that's having a good time in his free time. And I love seeing that.
Yeah. I love that you brought up, you know, because the looks that we get from Patrick Stewart, we've never seen on Picard. And I wrote that one down in my notes, you know, when she's like, "You're definitely better than you think." And that smile, like, yeah. I mean, get out. Come on. Picard actually has a heart, and he's happy, and we are happy for him that he finally, and you're right, that he gets to share his music with someone. And when you find someone, as I have found in my Trek family, like someone who has that passion, you know, that's why I love Star Trek Las Vegas. Like everyone is passionate about Star Trek. And so here Picard is finally, you know, gets to share his music. Someone who plays, someone that who understands, like, yes, we know Data plays, but there's no emotional response with that. He definitely has a lot to share with Beverly, but Beverly doesn't play an instrument. So in that one aspect, like here he gets to...
I don't think he's even shared anything about how much that music means to him with Beverly, is the sense that I get.
Right. Because I think that there's, you know, when you find someone that, you know, has that connection, you're going to open up in different ways. And I think, yeah, it just hasn't happened with Beverly. They are still sharing breakfast and dinner, you know, they were having dinner together before the concert, you know? And so, you know, that there's that, you know, relationship that Crusher and Picard have. But yeah, he hasn't divulged and shared everything, I think, and it's made obvious, you know, and I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you both mentioned it. It's the smile. Is there something really critical, and you could quite easily miss it. But the fact that you see, I mean, you see him happy before, but not like this. It's so right. Different to anything before. And I think even, you know, during the concert scene at the end, when he talks to Nella and she realizes that he's got a love of music, you even see that initial, she's suddenly, you know, she doesn't necessarily smile as much, but you can see she's suddenly interested. So they just seem like such a good match. And yeah, it's so touching that he shares this really private, personal and vulnerable moment with yeah. Nella.
Picard shares archaeology and the love of the hunt and stuff with Vosh, but this is completely different. This is on a completely different level, and I think more intelligent, because Vosh is just in it for profit. And here we get Darren, you know, just completely opposite, that just is playing her music for passion and because she wants to learn and she enjoys it. And I can see there's connections that Picard has with Vosh, but I think the connection is much stronger with Darren.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that you see is that, and Picard is also like really interested in the stellar sciences stuff that Darren is doing. Like, I think over like breakfast with Beverly, he's like, oh, this is so exciting, this and this and this. And it, she doesn't look terribly interested. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, no. I must be boring you. but like they can connect on that level as far as like science and an intellectual pursuit, but they can also connect on this creative level with the music. And one of the things that I absolutely love about this episode that you very, very rarely see in Star Trek is that you're seeing two people just like they don't even know what they're going to do. They're just kind of like in their court improvising or jamming is what you call it if it was rock maybe. But like usually in Star Trek, what you see is like there's this finished product of music. People perform it, clap, done. But, you know, a lot of the experience, I'm not a musician myself, but my wife is. And a lot of the experience that she has of music is in those moments where she is, you know, with someone else or other people who are musicians and they're like, oh, let's go ahead and play this and improvise that. Oh, what would this be like? And it's in the process of like making a song or making something, which you very rarely see in Star Trek, but which is very important if you're a musician. So I really like that they have that creative aspect and the intellectual science aspect, which is why I think that she's the best match for Picard. So just on kind of both of those levels.
And I love how it boosts his confidence with his music. When she first comes into his quarters, even before that, at the concert, he's very dismissive. Oh, I'm just an amateur. And then when she comes into his quarters and they play together, he's like, oh, I wouldn't inflict that on someone. And, oh, I'm not very good. And she's like, well, it doesn't matter as long as you enjoy what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And you can see him get more uplifted by her belief in him. And
I think what I was noticing this time around is that at first it almost seems a bit like she's humoring him when he starts playing a little bit. And she's like, no, it's good. Keep going. But then as he really kind of relaxes and lets it out, you can see that she's genuinely impressed and just loves making this music with him. So I just like that kind of transformation that you see as well, because maybe she's humoring him a little bit at first, but then after that, it's like, oh my goodness, this is great. You know, let's just see where this leads. So
on a complete random side note, I love that when Nella brings in the portable piano,
yeah,
Picard's like, oh, that's amazing. Like we have those now.
Well, yes, but like her portable piano, I didn't count it, but you know, maybe it has like 15 or 20 keys. I don't know how she's playing, like, you know.
Yeah, and why are they
like
so
an 88
wide?
Key piano.
I noticed that. I'm like,
it was the prop. But I was trying to figure it out. I was like, okay, you know, on a standard piano, you have 88 keys. Maybe on like a reduced keyboard, you have 60 something. But this is like a lot fewer, right? It's like, how do you do that? Are you just like pressing something to go up an octave or whatever? I don't know. There was
is
something
the piano
about it
that just supposed to know that you're going up or going down?
Yeah, there was something a little distracting about that. But yeah, like it was like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. This thing you can roll out. It probably would have been more impressive if it was holographic, but you get to see her then playing like a grand piano in the concert, which I think was really cool, actually, if they would have been able to have something like that in his quarters. Maybe not. But yeah, that little piano is kind of funny.
Yeah, it's cool. High tech.
Yeah. It reads your mind to tell what octave you want to go
there
to.
You
That's
go.
What it is.
So we've seen Crusher have to go through Picard and Vosh, and I think she handles it very well. You know, and Vosh is surprised when she comes back on Cupid. He hasn't mentioned me to anyone, you know, and Beverly's like, no, because you're not that important type of vibe.
Yeah,
that's in my headcanon, you know, it's like, yeah, you're not important. Picard is definitely talking to Beverly about Darren, you know, and sharing things. And I just find it, and maybe this is just me being catty, but when Darren goes into sick bay and has injured her elbow because she's been playing so much, and, oh, I've been playing a lot with the captain. Like, this is calculating. This is manipulative. And she's like, oh, well, And then Crusher's like, well, I think you're going to be fine. And she's like, and then Nella's like, well, I wouldn't want to have to cancel tonight. I mean, she's making it very clear, you know, I mean, if they're, she's marking her territory, like, okay, I'm dating the captain now, so you need to back off type of thing. And I think Beverly handles it very well. And I'm, and then I didn't even think about it until at the end of the scene. And I'm like, okay, I have played many hours of piano, many, mm-hmm. many, and I have never injured my elbow from playing multiple hours. I found that was a little.
No, there is definitely innuendo going on.
Yes.
There, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. So like it wasn't the, just
yeah,
me.
No, it's not just you. And I think they wrote it to kind of mean it that way, because Crusher says you have a mild strain. And Darren says, I've been playing the piano a lot. I guess the captain and I overdid it a little last night.
Right.
I mean, come on. That means they slept together
Please,
last night, right? It's
got to
be. But then, like, it goes further, and Crusher says, the captain? And Nell says, yes, he plays a kind of flute, a resican, I think he said. And Crusher says, yes, but I didn't know he played duets, which to me is like a cutting remark, like, oh, I didn't know he was having a relationship with someone, not just like piano flute duet, but like, yeah. They're sleeping together.
Yeah.
Is the way that I took that. And I think Crusher even has this look like, I didn't know he was playing duets.
Yeah, there's definitely looks there. If you pause it at the right time, you're like, oh, that's...
like, uh-huh. Yeah. And like, it was funny, like, you know, we were talking on Twitter a little that we were going to talk about this episode, and somebody who's a very big Beverly Crusher fan is like, I don't like that episode, but I do like the looks that yes. Beverly gives.
Yeah, I saw that.
And it's true. I mean, I think she's just... Yeah, I think she's handling it pretty well, but has like these little cutting like looks and remarks. Yeah.
Okay, so it wasn't just me because
it wasn't
like,
just you. I mean, a mild strain from playing too much piano. Yeah. I don't know about that.
I know. And so I was like, Nella,
that would be like Worf and Jadzia coming into sick bay and being like, oh, you know what? We overdid it on those Batleth fights that we have in the hall. They're like, no, we know what you did.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So another thing that I really liked about this episode was that, and it goes back to the beginning when they're going to the very first concert. And we see Picard, but then in the background is Troy. And we all know I love Troy, so I'm bringing her up. But to see, so we get to see her reaction because we can see, oh, Picard's feelings are changing. And we just, she all of a sudden just, you know, looks slowly to Picard. And so it's like we are witnessing the moment when Picard starts to develop feelings. And I just thought that was so well done. She's still a little out of focus, but yet enough that we can see Picard at the very beginning. And I just thought that was perfect and used Counselor Troy perfectly in this episode.
Yeah, so you're thinking that Picard really starts falling in love with her, like, at this concert. Is that it?
Yeah. I think it's just a curiosity, you know, because they have their back and forth. Well, maybe you should learn to expect things, you know, out of the mm-hmm. ordinary for me, you know, that back and forth. But then at the concert, and he feels her passion and emotion when playing, and I think that's when we see it.
Yeah, and I think there can be a really interesting thing with music as a connection, because I think that, like, especially when he sees her playing and how good she is at it and that she's bringing passion into it, it's like there's this other side more than just the science or the intellectual discussion, which I think she's passionate about to a certain extent. But again, it like brings in this other thing and it's like, aha, okay, now I know something else about you and your passion and creativity. And I think there can be something really alluring about music, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're right about that. What do you think, Rob?
Do you like how Troy is used?
Oh,
in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, she is used quite a lot, actually. I love that scene where he almost asks her permission. She's quite sweet.
Are you asking my permission?
Yeah.
And again, that shows their close relationship, that he trusts her counsel.
Yeah, I love that scene.
Yeah. But what I love about that as well is that you get a sense of how other people are. Well, this is a different scene where Picard and Troy are in the ready room, but, you know, Picard's asking, like, you know, is the relationship that obvious? And Troy says, in a way that pleases people who care about your happiness, yes it is. And I think she smiles there. And it's like, wow, like other people on the ship are like, Captain Picard's in a relationship and he's happy, this is great. Like they're you know, all in for it, which is cool because you don't get to see those reactions really.
No, you don't. And yeah, when you are, you know, you have a leader and that you love, you want them to be happy. And so, yeah, I think it's very nice mm-hmm. to see that.
I like that scene when Picard asks Riker if he wants to fence with him.
Oh, yeah.
It's really, and Riker, the look that Riker gives, like...
Oh, and he does this thing with his finger, like, it's easy. Like, into his chest, and Riker's like, yes, sir.
Who is this guy?
What has happened to my captain?
Yeah, like, the last time something like this happened, an alien presence was singing drinking songs in the 10 forward, you know? Like, I wonder if his thought in that moment was like, has he been taken over again?
Yeah.
But I like how also he says, he repeats what Nella says to him about... Riker says, mm-hmm. I'm not very good. And he says what Nella says to him about, well, it doesn't matter if you're not good, just as long as you enjoy it.
Yeah.
And again, you see that big smile on his face, how she just makes him so happy.
And then watching it this time, I was like, oh, where is the scene with Picard and Riker fencing? I want to know what that's like. But yeah, definitely. I mean, it just changes like his whole demeanor. He just comes out of the ready room and he's like, oh... it's going to be fine. Everything's great.
Yeah.
And like, what's really interesting about this episode as well is sometimes, you know, if you think back to Vosh and the episode she's in, there's like all of this peril and danger for, well, in Cupid, it's for a lot of the crew and for Captain's Holiday, you know, there's all of these machinations and things going on and life's in danger, but they really focus a lot on the love story. And the thing that's the danger kind of comes in toward the end.
Right.
And it's not like there's an alien presence or there's all these machinations or anything like that. It's like there's a natural event that's putting this colony in danger. So I thought it was interesting that they took so much of the episode to really focus on the love story and the development of it. And the danger comes in later. And it's just a natural danger. It's like there are these firestorms. It happens. And it's because they could have had, I don't know, Darren being kidnapped by Ferengi or something. I think that would have torpedoed the episode. But mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes they do something like that, and it wasn't. It was just in the natural course of ship business. This is what's happened, and things will happen. So, yeah, I just like how they did that. It was a more subtle approach, I thought.
Yeah,
and I think that scene, the scenes where Nella's on the planet and she's coordinating the, you know, the effort to keep the colonists safe from this firestorm. That's another reason to me why. And people can send me hate mail, where I think she's a better match for Picard than Vash or any other love interest, because, you know, she's brave. She's, you know, fearless. She's intelligent. She's, as Crusher points out, forthright. She's just, she's an equal to Picard.
Yeah. See, what I would say is that, I mean, I agree with you. And I think Crusher is that, but the writers didn't give her enough of an opportunity to show that.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
But no, like, I agree. It's like she is willing to risk her life. And I thought it was interesting how they fit it in there. Like, okay, there's this person who's like the head of Stellar Sciences on, you know, going on this away mission. But I guess it made sense how they kind of explained it. But yeah, she's willing to just go down there, risk her own life to be able to save these people. And I thought that was great. And like, I'm always amazed when I see this, because in the course of one episode, you see like what a dedicated scientist she is, what a passionate music player she is, you know, how brave she is. There's like all of these things that they're showing within the one episode. And for me, at least, it doesn't feel forced. It feels like this is part of the natural course of who she is and reacting to all of these events. And it's not like she's perfect or anything, because in the beginning, she's, you know, really ticked off that someone is interrupting her experiment until she realizes it's Picard. And then even after that, you know, she's kind of pushing him and challenging him. And toward the end, when he says, oh, well, maybe you can just, you know, resign your commission and be here with me, she comes back with, well, maybe you can resign your commission and come to a starbase with me. It's like, I'm going to be my own person and not be manipulated by the circumstances. I feel like she's really strong, just like start to finish. And I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know. I could keep going for a while, but...
Well, Rob, when you were talking, I'm like, oh, man, you are right. This now I'm really liking Nella Darren for Picard. Oh, my gosh.
Are you part of Team Darren now? Hashtag Team Darren.
Well, and because I like him with Anish, but, I mean, even in a movie that's 2 hour long, we have this one, you know, 47-minute episode where they... bring out all of these characteristics that you just said that's so true and that's such a good match for Picard. I mean, she is just so bold and forthright and just comes out and is decisive and is a great leader. And she takes action when need be. And yeah, she's really awesome. She's really awesome. So I just had one other quick thing to talk about before we head out, before our final thoughts. So when Picard is talking to Crusher and explaining what Darren's experiments is about, I just math geeked out. And it's real math. That's, again, what I love about Star Trek. Like, so he's explaining to Beverly that she's creating a mathematical model that will predict the configuration, like when a star in a galaxy.
What configuration would be like? Yeah, 2 million years?
Yeah, to predict the configuration of a star system 2 million light years, and that it uses.
I think it's 2 million years in the future.
2 million years, yeah, not light years. Sorry,
which is amazing.
2 million years in the future, and they're using fractal particle motion, which seriously is a real thing. Like fractal, I'm taking this clip. I'm going to be using it in my math lessons when we talk about fractals, because it's used in nowadays. Well, and again, I bring up the Star Trek reference here, but like fractal particle motion, that is a real thing. And I love that the writers know about it and are using it here. And it makes total sense that it's going to be to predict a star system. I loved it, guys. I had to math geek out.
That's great. Well, I guess whenever they say the word fractal, it'll get mentioned. But I mean, fractals are a really important thing in math and also in design and all kinds of stuff. So yeah, it is pretty great, but I'm impressed by that, like 2 million years from now, right?
Yeah, I don't know about that, but
they have a few hundred years to get there.
The application of fractal particle motion, that's a real thing, and that it would theoretically do that. So
yeah, and Darren's willing to, you know, she has some time to wait 2 million years to find out if it's right. So, you know, one of the things that I always wonder when I hear this episode, see this episode, because it's the only time we see Darren, is if it would have fit in to put her in a later episode or movie. Now, at this point, unfortunately, the actress who played her, Wendy Hughes, who was an Australian actress, died in 2014 of cancer. So it's not going to come back played by that actor at this point. But I wonder if during the course of the show or any of the movies that's something you would have liked to see, Rob?
Definitely. 100%. I would have.
Yeah. Okay.
I can see why perhaps you might not have her featuring heavily in something, like a whole episode, but you could even have like a passing reference or, you know, a cameo somewhere. I'm hoping with my Trek Book Club hat on that she appears even briefly or there's a reference to her.
You know what? I looked it up. There are a few references, but it's not much in the books.
Okay. So, I would have really liked to have seen her again. Even if it's got nothing to do with Picard's romance, to see what she's doing, what she's up to. She was just such a great character. It would have been good to see, see her again.
What do you think, Amy?
Yeah, I think a reference would have been nice. I mean, we got Vosh to come back, and that was hard.
We got her to come back in a second TNG episode and a DS9 episode.
That's right. Well, have I seen that one yet?
That's in first season.
Oh, yeah.
It's Q-less.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Yeah, with Q. So, yeah, I definitely, after seeing what was developed in this wonderful episode, definitely would have liked to have seen her again, but for sure, like at least a reference, you know, in passing. I mean, we saw Leah Brahms referenced, you know, a second time, a third time.
Well, got to see the real one a second time, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so she's very intelligent. She definitely does her job. So, yeah, where is she now type of thing? You know, where is she in Starfleet? What amazing contributions is she making in stellar cartography and stuff like that? So definitely I would have liked to have seen her. I don't know if maybe just more of a reference instead of actually seeing her again.
That's interesting, because actually as we were talking about this, I mean, I would have liked to have seen her again, but you would have had to deal with, you know, what it means for the relationship at that point.
Yeah.
But I would have liked to see her as part of an episode where she's like the captain of a science vessel. And there's this mission where she can help out in some way, and just to see more of her. It doesn't have to rekindle the relationship or anything, but Yeah, I thought about that. And I was really sad to find out that the actress who played her died a few years ago.
Yeah, same. Yeah, the actress played her so well. She really nailed the emotion and the connection with Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
So, Rob, what are your final thoughts on this episode and sort of what we've talked about today?
Well, would it be possible to share some personal reflections about the episode and perhaps get a little bit deep?
Absolutely, yeah. Please.
And some of this might sound a bit cheesy, so bear with me. So there's something about this episode that really resonates with me and makes me think of my own relationship with my partner. And in this episode, and I think we've all said this, Nella brings out the best in Picard. She brings him out from maybe not isolation, but a form of isolation. She makes him engage with music more and feel more confident. She brings out his passion about music. We see in that the smiles that we see from Picard in this episode, she makes him really happy. She makes his life more complete. And this is how this is the cheesy bit. This is how I feel about my partner. So my partner makes me a better person. We share similar values and passions. We're devoted to one another. And this is the really cheesy bit. When I'm with my partner, it puts a smile on my face like Nella does for Picard. So my partner's a bit like my Nella Darren. And this is the getting a bit deeper. Like I said before, I'd forgotten about this episode until fairly recently. And it struck a chord with me because of fairly recent events in my life. So myself and my partner have both been through suffering with depression and anxiety. And in fairly recent times, my partner's mental health has deteriorated to a point where, you know, she made attempts on her life. And it was incredibly difficult for myself and my partner. And like we see that moment with Picard where he thinks he's lost Nella and he just shuts down. And, you know, he closes that case on his flute and he just doesn't know what to do with himself. And at that point in my life, I felt like that. I felt utter despair. I didn't know what to do. I was just a mess. So, yeah, that scene resonated with me because I felt like Picard. Like I shut down at the possibility of losing my partner. So I can completely see how Picard felt like that. So it has a really special resonance for me about a difficult period of my life. And I know that's a common thing with Star Trek, but, you know, a particular episode or a particular series reminds someone of a difficult part of their life and how they pulled through it. So, yeah, and my partner is like I said, is my Nella Darren. She's intelligent, beautiful, brave, and talented. So that was my personal reflections about the episode.
Thank you so much for sharing.
Yes, thank you. I know sometimes it's not easy to share these really personal things, but thank you so much for sharing that and the connection you have. That is often what happens in Star Trek. We'll see something and it'll have a real impact on us. And so, yeah, thank you for sharing that.
Justin, your final thoughts?
Yeah, well, you know, like I think, Rob, when you suggested this, I was like, lessons. I love that episode. Let's do it. I love Nella Darren. This is awesome. I mean, but it also caused me to, as we've been, you know, talking about this discussion, to look into it maybe a little bit more deeply, and the effect that it has on Picard, because I think that, you know, this is one episode, but it's the first one where he really deals with, I guess maybe the only one where he really in depth, we see him deal with what happened in the Inner Light and what it means to him. So as a follow-up to that, I think it's important for his character development. It's also important that for most of the episodes of the episode, he's not really making decisions necessarily as a captain, but as someone in their free time and how he's going to spend his free time and whether he's going to be in this relationship. So it's caught up in, you know, the romance in the workplace and the decision-making and all of that. But the real core of the episode is Picard's own feelings, which is very rare to see for that to be the core of an episode. And so I feel like you get to see more deeply into who Picard is, not necessarily, you know, as the captain in difficult situations, but as a human being, which I think is one of the reasons, you know, I think we had talked recently about family. That's one of the reasons also I think that's a great episode, because you see him more as a human being and not the captain. So I think it's a really unusual episode in that way, but I think they execute it really well. And I think the Picard-Darren relationship is great. Again, it's my favorite Picard relationship. And you do, and I love, you know, even in this episodic TV that you see in The Next Generation, that you get to see a really well-rounded, well-drawn character like Nella Darren over the course of 45 minutes. I think it's impressive what they achieved here with this episode. I think it's very memorable. It remains one of my all-time favorites because I love seeing Picard happy. It also, like a lot of the episode can bring me to tears because it's like, this is, for me, like the time when he's really happy and sharing the music and feeling like he can experience that again, what he experienced in The Inner Light, I think is really touching. So I love this episode. And, you know, I hope, you know, even the listeners that don't like Nella Darren or the relationship, I mean, that we've talked about some things that are interesting reflections for them. But I think it's a great episode that I was just so happy to revisit and, you know, find out your perspectives on.
Yeah, this episode, especially in my recent rewatch, like, yeah, it is powerful on so many levels. And I love that we get to see this amazing character development from, like you said, a captain who we are just used to seeing play the captain role. And there's little tidbits, you know, of Captain Picard, of, you know, him getting his saddle, because every serious, you know, person has a saddle. So this brings another level to our beloved captain and the interplay that he has again with his feeling of his duty to the starship and the duty to himself as a person to be and to allow yourself to be happy, I think hits and resonates with many people, and allowing yourself to go there, I think is something that's very brave that we don't see him do very often, and that we do get to see that in this episode. I think, Rob, you're right. I put it down in my notes, like when he fears that the away mission, especially her, was lost on the planet, like he closes the top of the flute box. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, what does that symbolize? Is that him closing his heart, that he's never going to allow himself to open up and to trust someone and to be vulnerable? Because I have felt like I have done that in the past, you know, of just, you know, you're symbolic. I'm closing the box. I'm not going to open up again.
And it's so effective how they do it. He doesn't have to say it. Closing the box, just that motion is just devastating without any words, which is incredible.
And that he's, you know, going to stop playing music. He's going to shut down his heart and not do that again. And then for her to come back and to tell him on the way out, they're not going to have a relationship, but to say, don't give up on your music, like so powerful and so poignant. And just that was, she was talking to his heart, you know, no matter what becomes of us, like, don't give up. Don't shut the box was what I saw. And I just thought, man, because I, in my life, shut the box. It's easier, you know? You don't want to become vulnerable. You don't want to have to take that risk again. And so episode definitely resonated with me on a couple of different levels, and just was glad to have the opportunity to discuss these so many fine points and, I mean, social commentary about workplace romances and, you know, it just so much in this episode. So thank you. Well, Rob, where can people find you online?
People can find me on Twitter. I'm at Trekkie Rob, and they can find me on my Trek Book Club account as well on Twitter, which is at Trek Book Club. I'm also on the Babel Conference every now and then and lots of other Facebook Star Trek groups. So yeah, feel free to come chat to me. Always happy to talk Star Trek.
Yes. Thank you so much for coming on, Earl Grey. It was an absolute delight having you on.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been really, really great. Really enjoyed it.
All right, listeners. Well, for next week, we are going to continue our favorite moments. And yes, you might be thinking, oh, you've reached season 7. Well, we're going to do our favorite moments from the movies. So next week, we will talk about our favorite character moments from the movie Generations. So if you want to rewatch that movie and tell us your favorite character moments, that would be great. And that's what we'll be doing next week. Well, it's been so much fun talking about the episode Lessons, but it isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Literary Treks.
I agree, though. It's fun to say, hey, I know who these characters are. I've seen them before, and now they're all together. That is cool. But at the same time, how realistic is it that they would all know Worf at some point or another?
Well, it's just further evidence of my thesis that Star Trek is the story of Worf. This is what I've always said. Worf is the central character in everybody's lives in Star Trek.
The 602 Club.
And what was, in some ways, I think, poignant for where we are today, you know, the word Nazi gets thrown around a lot. But I think the beauty of who Juliana is that she sees past even the word Nazi. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really important. I think that that is the, I mean, we need more messages like that.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
Okay, next year, that's my goal. I will be, yeah. I will carry the Haley... Well, mojo.
You'll have the head, so.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm acting in behalf of Haley. Give me a hug.
Yes. Just, as long as you don't tackle them on the way to the staircase, I think it's okay.
To the journey!
So they don't call it a navy. They call it the Federation Naval Patrol. But same difference. It's basically a navy. But what is its reason for being?
To me, it sounds like they just renamed the Coast Guard. So the Coast Guard is no longer, and now it's just the Federation Naval Patrol. But I'm guessing for like people that go out pleasure sailing and get stuck, the Federation Naval Patrol is there to help.
They rescue like the tourists on Risa who are drowning?
Exactly. They just rescue people.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find the show.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us, and we might read your email on the show. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Justin, where can people contact you when you're not trying to convince the world of the great Picard-Darren relationship?
Well, when I'm not trying to do that, like I got to do during this episode, which is great, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. You know, my Nella Darren tweets are just a fraction of a percent, so it's not just that all day. It's all kinds of Star Trek everywhere. I'm currently tweeting out my Season 6 rewatch of The Next Generation and about a bunch of other Star Trek stuff. And you can also find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. So, Amy, where can people contact you when you're not playing your Resican flute?
Well, you can find me here on the network. I co-host The Edge with Patrick Devlin, and that covers Star Trek Discovery, which we have some new episodes to talk about, our short trek. So look,
2 days from when this drops will be the first one.
I
oh my
know,
goodness.
I'm so excited. Oh my gosh. Very, very excited. You can find me on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, where I'm tweeting about, as I mentioned, my Season 4 Deep Space Nine watch, and yeah, just saw For the Cause. But my favorite place is right there on the Babel Conference, so I'm right there.
If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, The Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our passionate pianists. They are our current associate producers, Norman Lau, Justin Ozer, Michael Huter, and Thomas Appel. We have a lovely quartet. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially Earl Grey. So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
Yes, but I didn't know he played duets.
Great joy and gratitude.